From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, you know what we do? We make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. We are just days away from the start of the 2025 college football season. Week zero starts tomorrow. We got Farmageddon. No Big Ten teams in action. But we're 8 days away from some Big Ten football, and we're excited to talk about it. A lot of different topics today we're going to get to. And we took a little break. We did like two or three shows in a row, so we can't like go too long.
So but, yeah, true.
We're going to be back on a regular schedule, not Fridays at 3 p.m. But if you're watching us live on YouTube, appreciate that. You can get us across the podcasting platforms everywhere where you get the podcasts, you know, your Apple podcasting app. What we'd like you to do, leave us a five-star rating and review. We love those. Now on Spotify, you can leave us a five-star rating too. David, I went to our show today, left us a five-star rating on Spotify. Now my Spotify handle is some like, it looks like a made-up password by a computer. I don't know why you can't change it, but whatever. But you can't leave a review per se. But every episode, if you're listening on Spotify, a lot of people like to listen to podcasts on Spotify, you can leave a comment on each episode. So let us know if we sucked, why we sucked, whatever it is. You can do that on Spotify too. But leave us that five-star rating there as well. And you can email us, big10cast@gmail.com. Call or text us at 424-532-0678. And of course, tweet at us, B1G Podcast. Boom.
That was beautiful. Would you like the newest five-star review?
I would love that.
This is from JBK415. Simply thank you. I'm at the airport waiting for my flight. I received a YouTube notification about your show, and I'm listening to the show live as I write this. The Sinead O'Connor voicemail singer wasn't any good, but it was quite entertaining and strange all at the same time. Fits perfectly with the show. I've wanted to write this review for a while now. I started listening to your YouTube channel and now occasionally catch episodes here when I miss them on YouTube.
Okay.
I'm originally from Ohio, now in Dallas, and of course was born a diehard Ohio State Buckeye fan. I'm also a massive college football junkie who watches games every Saturday from 9 a.m. Eastern, starting with college game day, switching to big noon kickoff, then spending the rest of the day with a four-game multi-view setup on my 100-inch projector screen on the sidewall and the main game on my 85-inch TV up front. I flip the audio to whatever's the hottest game of the moment, starting at noon and, on a lucky Saturday, ending around 1 a.m. Central with the last West Coast game. My viewing priority is Ohio State first, then the Big Ten, then the best games available at any given moment. I won't lie, I'm a bit of an SEC hater, and I often find myself rooting against them. I started watching your show about 3 years ago, right around the time of the Pac-12's demise. Your personalities are unique and entertaining, and your college football knowledge and discussion are solid. Honestly, some of your best entertainment moments come from those off-track conversations. Though I'll admit, a few discussions completely lose me, like those princess debates. Keep doing what you're doing. I really appreciate what you both bring to college football coverage, and I think a large audience feels the same way. Even more, people would if they knew about you two. Thanks again for all the great content. Sorry this review took me so long to write. Cheers, Jason. That was just a very sweet review.
That was really, yeah.
That was just very kind.
Yeah. For someone that listened to the show for like 3 years, I don't know if he gets us quite like, you know.
Wow.
You're not supposed to be that nice to us.
That was just nice.
We got some active chat going on.
I can't handle that.
That's good. No, thank you for that. Really appreciate it and glad, you know, we can bring you some entertainment. I think we do have unique personalities and we keep you guys entertained. We keep the show going just because of all of you and we love it. People are excited for the show. The chat's going off. I love it. So if you're in the chat, thank you for doing that. And you know what? I also want to thank Mr. Woods.
Who?
Our friends over at MyBookie. Yeah, uh-huh. They're back. Your fantasy league pays bragging rights, right? But MyBookie, that pays cash. You've done the research. You've got your gut picks. Now it's time for cash. Saturday, it's college chaos. Sunday, it's NFL insanity. And with MyBookie, you've got every angle covered. Spreads, player props, live bets, and the ones you only a whisper about until they hit. The setup's seamless. One account, one wallet. Bet your game, play some blackjack, and reload without ever leaving the app. And if you're new to MyBookie, use promo code POC, and any bet you choose up to $500 is fully covered. That's crazy. Make your play, and if it doesn't hit, you get right back when you opt in using your bet back bonus token. That's with promo code POC. This isn't fantasy. This is the real season. Let's cash with my bookie.
Beautiful read. Beautiful read. Hey, I've got a point of order for everyone out there. Yeah. So I'm wearing my, if you can see it, my big Phoenix Energy shirt today because I was reminded.
Hold it up again. I'll like do yep. do just you.
Yeah, big. I'm trying to. It's hard. It's hard. There it is. It's hard. Yeah. See what I did there? I'm wearing my big Phoenix Energy shirt because there was a Chiron for one of the television networks that called him Michael Penis Jr.
No way.
Which is obviously not his name, obviously. It's Phoenix. So I have this shirt. I have That's My Pig Farmer for Bryson Barnes from Utah. I need something associated with ASU next. I think that's my new team that I'm adopting.
Okay.
As, you know, obviously a lifelong ASU fan. Are there good Dillingham shirts? Like, what do we got, ASU fans? I know there's still a couple of you who listen. I need an ASU shirt.
A Denny Killingham for sure.
Like Denny Killingham. Like, does somebody have a Denny Killingham shirt?
Yeah.
That's what I need.
That'd be great. Brian in the chat says, oh, my God. I just realized David's beard is back. Thank you, David. David. I missed it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What was the thought process behind bringing the beard back?
Inertia.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. As always.
Your life is pretty much.
As always, inertia. I cannot. I have to take an action to stop it from growing. And so I did not do that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. No. Nothing about this is intentional, everyone.
Okay.
We got a lot to talk about, Ryan.
We do. Where do you want to start?
I want to start wherever you want to start. There's a subject matter we're going to talk about that I've been talking about all week, but we should not lead off with that.
There's comments about that, too. Yeah. So, again, if you're watching us live on YouTube, we appreciate it. If you put a question in there, I'll start and get to it later. Why don't we start off with the big one, what we've been asking for, the SEC going to 9 conference games in 2026. You heard it yesterday. The news broke. There's going to be a 3+6 format. So every SEC team will have 3 regular rivals that they play all the time. And then 6 games to rotate. I kind of like that format, actually. There's going to be fighting over it. Apparently, presidents sort of fought over who their permanent, you know, rivals would be. They hired like an analytics firm to try to make an even schedule. And then also they're going to do a requirement that everyone has to play a Power 4 team as well. So I think we're going to see the last of those FCS games in November kind of thing. And, you know, I think it's a rule the Big Ten actually had and then got rid of. So I think the Big Ten should probably bring that back. They wanted the SEC to go to 9. So Indiana, like, dropping Virginia just doesn't make any sense. But, yeah, so I think this is good to keep sort of, like, you know, as much of an apples to apples comparison you can have, because those extra, you know, 8-9 losses, whatever it is during the season, you know, they kind of add up, and you're not going to have teams that can go 2-6 in conference and make a bowl game anymore. So that's, I like this move. I think the ACC will eventually follow with the number. They have 17 teams. So mathematically it doesn't quite work out, but they'll figure something out. But I like it. I don't know. What were your thoughts when this came down?
In a vacuum, I like it. In practice, I hate it, because the more conformity there is between the different leagues, the more consolidation there's going to be, and the bigger this playoff is going to get, and the stupider everything is going to get.
Oh.
If you keep and we made this point whenever they were talking about this, like a month or two ago, where they were disagreeing about the playoffs. A big bone of contention was the SEC only being at 8 conference games, and that was what was keeping the divide between the Big Ten and the SEC on what playoff format should be. With this, it takes away one of the sticking points between the Big Ten and the SEC, which means we're probably going to see an expanded playoff sooner rather than later along some lines. That's going to be stupider. It already is stupid, but it's going to get dumber. And the more, you know, there's agreement and comity between the SEC.
Ooh, comity,
nice. Yeah, you like that? And the Big Ten, the more the sport is going to get stupider. So I like it. It's something we've all been talking about for a long time. It'd be great if everyone was doing the same thing. But the reason they're doing this, Like, the actual reason they're doing this is so that they can continue to ruin the sport.
I think Greg Sankey wanted this, and I think some SEC athletic directors wanted it if they had automatic qualifiers. Then the SEC figured out, hey, the automatic qualifiers are not as good for us because we're going to get more teams in anyway. And the Big Ten's like, look, you got to go to nine. I think this is what some they wanted, at least at the commissioner level, wanted this. I think the television partners want this. And unfortunately, David, I think, you know, sometimes you have the, you know, tinfoil hat stuff going on. But I do feel like this is sort of like, okay, now you're going to play 10 power conference teams. And some SEC teams are going to play 11. You have these built in, you know, like South Carolina has, you know, Clemson on there. And, you know, Florida's got Florida State and Miami, you know, they're like, so they have multiple games. I think this is sort of the next step towards when you have a super league, you're only playing teams in your league. So it would essentially be a 12-game schedule of all power four teams, but there wouldn't be a power four. There would just be
one league.
One league, yeah. So I feel like in your mind, like, yeah, I think this is a step towards that.
Yeah, which isn't good.
No, I don't think so. Let's see. We had Kyle in the chat. We'll talk about this a little more. He said, oh, sorry, this was the wrong one. I'll put that. Johnny says, I moved out to Tempe for work and my girlfriend getting into med school out here. So I'll be on the prowl for Denny Killingham. Sure.
Thank you very much, Johnny.
But Kyle says, the Big Ten and SEC crossover, but SEC needs to add two more teams. Ultimately, each league will have 20 with Cal and Stanford. Yeah, I don't know if I don't think that crossover thing is going to happen anymore. I think what I was talking about is, it's eventually just going to be one big league 5 years from now or something like that. That's my guess is the next iteration. Yeah. But I think the Big Ten should do this too, right? Do you think everyone should? How dumb is it that Indiana dropped Virginia? Like, if you want to, that's a power four team that kind of sucks, right? Like, that's the ones you want. You don't want to, if you had Texas or something, you're like, crap, I want to get out of that game. Virginia? Like, just what?
Like to see is a final form for all of this so that we can all then start, you know, making, you know, assumptions and beliefs based off of whatever final form this is taking. But there isn't a final form anywhere approaching. They're going to be at 14 or 16, and then it's going to be 24, and then it's going to be 32, and then it's going to be half of fucking college football makes the, sorry, Griffin, college football playoff. And it's, you know, Indiana doing what it did made sense at that time from a, you know, what's best for the program standpoint. Maybe it won't make sense in a year. I don't know. But I think in the same way that all these personnel rules are constantly changing, like changing the playoff format every like 3 years, which is what they're trying to do basically right now, it makes it really hard to plan. You know, and I think the more expansive it gets, the more it might incentivize or disincentivize certain types of scheduling. But I mean, yeah, I don't want to keep saying just it's stupid, but it is very dumb. Like I think it's making the regular season more and more irrelevant, and will continue to do so. And adding a ninth SEC game is okay, fine. That's a good move.
Yeah.
But the reality is that if you expand the playoff while doing that, it makes that ninth game matter a lot less, like a lot less.
Yeah.
Than it used to. So. I don't know. I think the SEC is probably thinking they're adding meaningful inventory that will get more butts in seats, more eyeballs on TVs, and I think that's right. Yep. But I think in aggregate, when you take away the importance of the regular season, you might actually end up with less in total. I don't know. We'll see.
Matthew says, I think we should make a playoff that's only for teams that start in the top 15 and drop out of the top 25. Sickos only, tourney.
Love it.
You're getting some weird tournaments. I was listening to, so our friends over at the Audible kind of revamped their show a little bit. They brought in Ralph Russo, who was with the AP for a really long time. He actually did some research I thought was funny, David, about the playoff. You're talking about this. So if you look at everyone makes their playoff picks, and a lot of it's just like the top 12 teams or 11 teams plus a group of five team in the country. But he said, when you look at the preseason polls, it's pretty consistent. You go to the top five, and I think he said four of the top five get in. So someone in the top five doesn't make the playoff. And then you go, there's like two from 6 to 10, and then there's two more from 11 to 20, and then there's one from 21 to 25, and then there's actually three teams that are un- preseason unranked that make the playoff. And last year there was four with like SMU, Indiana. I forget the other two, whatever. But so it's kind of fun when you look at it that way. So I think some of these, I like 12 teams to work for me. I like it. We didn't even have 1 year of it before they started to mess with it and want to change it. The contention between the SEC and the Big Ten was this Big Ten winning automatic qualifiers. The SEC did at first, then they changed their mind. They said, well, okay, if we're going to expand, you got to go to 9. Now they have. So we might get expansion. But the other topic we wanted to talk about was this format that got leaked. And I guess Greg Sankey talked about this on Feinbaum or something when he was asked about it, that Tony Petitti called him up and was like, hey, we're looking at a 24 or 28 team playoff, which I just think is really dumb. 7 automatic qualifiers from the SEC and the Big Ten. Just a terrible idea. And I know there were some rumors out there, people floating on, like they leaked this on purpose so it would die a quick death. But the fact that he did talk to Greg Sankey about it means that they were really thinking about it. I don't know. I think it's dumb, but what are your thoughts on it?
Well, obviously it's stupid. Petitti does not have his finger on the pulse of like college football generally.
Hell no, no.
He's a moron.
he's a TV executive still. He's like trying to plan the best.
Yeah, well, and just like try to murder the golden goose as quickly as humanly possible. Yeah, I mean, a 24-28, whatever, team system. I mean, we just don't talk anymore about like making this season like insanely long. Like it just... Remember all that like player wellness and health and all that kind of stuff that we used to talk about like 10 years ago? Like how that was a big, you know, topic of conversation, like concussions and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We just don't do that anymore. Like we do not talk about the number of games.
Because it wasn't real.
Yeah. You just rub some dirt on it and you get back out there and your brain is fine. But we don't talk about any of that stuff anymore. Everyone just decided to memory hole it. But there was a whole thing for a while about, you don't want to make the season too long and have too many games, because if you have too many games, then people are more likely to get seriously injured because it's a quantity thing. It's a, you know, percentage chance. It increases if you have more opportunities. But now we're talking about are they going to shorten the regular season? No, doesn't really sound like it. They would probably eliminate conference title games, but then you're ending up with some teams in a whatever 28 team system that would play what, like 17, 18 games a year? That's nuts.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Do you need 7 automatic qualifiers? Like, is the 7th team in the big... No. Like, no, you don't need that.
It's just... I don't know. I could rant about it all day, but it's at the end of the day, it's the same thing over and over and over again with all these people. It's that they don't actually like the sport. They don't care about the sport. You've got decision makers in charge who do not give a shit about college football, and they don't care that it's... not the same product a lot of people were into, and not one that they're necessarily as invested in as they used to be. I mean, I look at people on our message board, but I'm sure it's the same on yours, who it's not an everyday complaint, but it's a constant underlying theme. I don't even know who these players are.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know who these guys are on the team because it's 50 new players every single year. I don't know anything about this team. I don't know. I don't even know who we play. I don't know anything about the teams we play, you know, and I don't know why we're playing at 8 p.m. on a Friday. And just like all this stuff that's like, at a certain level, TV dictates, right? But why does TV dictate? TV dictates because this is a popular product. Why is it a popular product? Because people like it and they enjoy it and they have fun with it and it's a pastime and all that kind of stuff. Does TV's dictates make it less of those things for people? Then this human centipede is going to start eating its own asshole pretty soon. Like, people will only do things out of habit for so long.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still a good product, but the diehards that were like following recruiting and stuff, it's harder for them. I think the people that just like watching games and don't even know who their quarterback's name is, like, there's a lot of people like that and they still like this.
Yeah.
So, but for the people that we deal with all the time, it's not the same. Yeah. Schools aren't used to this. Like UCLA, like, fans are like, what's going on here? We're paying our quarterback this much money. Why is the ball not round? What is going on? Like, isn't that basketball? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
Well, and the other aspect with the college football playoff, apparently they're going to start using strength of record as a bigger portion of it. I think that's the SEC saying, hey, basically you want you know, they want an SEC team that's 9-3 to get in over another team from another conference that's 10-2.
Yeah.
Because we're tougher.
Yeah.
But I really think the 9-game deal is important because of the thing I mentioned where you would have teams that are like, oh, Alabama played 8 bowl teams, you know, and Arkansas went 2-6 in the SEC, but went 4-0 in the out of conference and they went to some bowl game or whatever. And nine conference games just changes the math a lot for me. Being a math guy, I think it's going to have a big impact on stuff. And I think we're definitely getting into the era that 12-0 is going to be really freaking tough. You're going to play more tough games. Ohio State lost 2 games and won the national championship and looked like the best team in the country by far by the end. I think you're going to see more of that. We're going to see more teams that just, you're going to have blemishes because you have such a good, the schedule is so tough and a lot of the teams are more even.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's true. To some extent that's true. I think there's some teams that'll still go undefeated. There's an imbalance still, I think, between the very, very elite teams and the rest of college football that's still present. I think what Ohio State ran into last year is that Chip Kelly was their offensive coordinator and fucked around in a couple of games.
Sorry, Griffin.
But, you know, the elite teams, they lose to other elite teams. They're not, you know, Ohio State's not losing to Arkansas. Yeah. They lose to Michigan because they're contractually obligated to lose to Michigan.
True.
Right.
Okay. So, cool. I think this is a good development. Obviously, the expanded playoff to 28 teams is stupid. It's all hell. So no to that. We also had some other, what was the other one? Michigan's sanctions came down. Poor Connor Stallions, 8-year show cause. Jim Harbaugh, who's just clamoring to get back into college football, he's got 10 years. And then the financial penalties for Michigan, which, you know, some people argue won't be significant. Athletic departments are really struggling right now. And you know, I think Michigan's acting, you know, are operating in the red and, you know, postseason money that's going to have to be forfeited. But you look at some of the calculations, it could be up to like $35 million, 20 to 30, you know, somewhere in that range. I think it's significant. I don't know what else you can do. I wasn't expecting like the hammer to drop, but I know like Michigan State fans and Ohio State fans weren't happy about it. But I don't know, where do you come down on the sanctions for Michigan?
I mean, I think it's about, honestly, I've gotten confused by this whole process because it seems like they've been punished on 4 different occasions for this at this point. Like, how many different suspensions of coaches have there been since this initially started happening?
Jerome Moore's going to not play against Western Michigan in Germany. He's not going to be on the field.
Yeah,
for
I mean,
that.
Look.
Next year, not even this year. Like, how stupid is that?
I raised my, like, my opinion about the Connor Stallion stuff from the jump, which is it a more extreme version of something that literally every single team does? Yeah. But is it something that literally every single team was doing, trying to steal another team's signals at some level? Also, yes. Like, there's a lot more to it. And frankly, I haven't had the energy or the inclination to read too much more about it. But that's the gist. And, you know, I think it's one of these fun things in college football that makes, honestly, cheating scandals like this are kind of what make college sports pretty fun. Like, having weird stuff like this happen where we can all talk about it and now it's lore for the rest of time. And Ohio State fans, whenever you lose to Michigan, because it'll happen again, probably this year and then the next year and the year after that, when it happens, you get to say, well, you guys probably cheated to make that happen. And you know what? Michigan fan, they got to eat that shit. Like, they got to eat that. Yeah. So it's...
Especially because Michigan was always like a holier than thou. Like,
yeah.
We all... No, everyone goes to... You know, like... No one's had their head coach suspended more than Michigan, like the last 3 decades or something. Like,
It's I don't know. I find it all like when people get too strident about this stuff, like the USC death penalty. Obviously, I've joked about it over the years that obviously USC was committing crimes against humanity, and it totally makes sense. But even if that wasn't true, like people wanting the death penalty for USC, it's like you don't want that. What you want is them to get sanctioned. You know, get a monetary fine, maybe a loss of like 5 scholarships that first year or whatever, and a bowl ban. And then you'll be able to say forever, Well, you're a school of a bunch of cheaters, you know, University of Spoiled Children, University of Spoiled Cheaters, whatever you want to call them. And you want, that's what, this isn't, they're not doing crimes. This is not, it's make-believe. We cover make-believe. We cover a little fantasy world. And all you're looking for as a fan is something to say to somebody else who's a fan of the other team, whether they're a friend or just some random person that you see at the game, and you want to be able to talk some crap to them. Or you want to be able to post some crap to them on a message board. Or you want to tweet some crap to them. Or whatever. It's part of the fabric of this whole thing. Now, with this ruling, even if it was a slap on the wrist, it is a finding that Michigan was guilty of this thing. That they cheated. Great. Every single fan base in the Big Ten can now say, you're a bunch of cheaters and nothing you ever do is valid. And Michigan has to take it.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about. Who cares? Did you really want Michigan's program to be burned to the ground? Like, did you want that? Because first, that wasn't going to happen. They're probably never going to pull that on another program. And second, I don't think you do. I think you want the games to be competitive when you're playing them. And then when you win, it actually matters.
I mean, they beat...
Because this is fantasy land.
Yeah,
we're dealing with not real things. It's football. Who cares?
Yeah, that half of the season, like, Harbaugh wasn't coaching half the games. They beat Ohio State without Jim Harbaugh on the sidelines. Like, it's, you know, like, they still won without the cheating and everything that year. So I don't know why you want to take anything away. People watch the games. They remember that stuff. We got a super chat from our buddy Matthew.
What a man.
Greatly respect the history / success of the University of Michigan. However, no more Michigan man, your 80s, 90s Miami. L-O-L.
See, exactly. Matthew now has the right, Michigan fans, to tell you, you are 80s, 90s Miami. All right? You are now the convicts on this in this scenario.
No more holier than thou stuff.
Absolutely not. That. Yeah.
Speaking of, our buddy, Pat Fitzgerald. Little mention of him. Remember he had that lawsuit?
Yeah.
$130 million. There was a hazing scandal. Was it Michael Schill was the president then, right? Like, is he still the president or did he leave? Or was, I forget. He was like the Oregon president and they went to Northwestern. I forget what the order, but he doesn't
seem
like.
Was it Michael Schill?
Is it, what was Schill?
Hang on. I'm pulling it up. Was it Michael Schill? It was.
Okay, you're questioning me, you know?
He's at Northwestern now. I don't know. When did he start?
He came from Oregon, right?
Yeah. We used to make shill jokes.
Because he was bad, and then he did this. This was sort of bad.
Well, yeah, anyway. He took office in 2022. So, yeah, it was him.
He's been there. Okay, so Fitzgerald had the $130 million lawsuit, which was now settled. The terms are undisclosed, but Fitzgerald continued to assert his innocence. He said he was unaware of the hazing. In the statement from Northwestern University, it says the legal process did not establish that any player reported hazing to Fitzgerald or that he condoned it. So I think he admitted that there was some hazing, but it wasn't something that was brought to him. So he probably made a bunch of money from this. It doesn't look good. I mean, if you read the comments out, they all went after the leadership at Northwestern. Obviously, the team has been kind of in shambles since this happened, but this step is over. I mean, the fact that he was such a legend there and gets fired like this and has to file a lawsuit and basically wins, you know, it's like, that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
Or a good look.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's kind of crazy if they didn't have like smoking gun stuff to do that to an alumnus, like,
yeah,
it's nuts. I mean, I think we can assume here that Northwestern lost pretty badly because they had to basically apologize. And I'm guessing that tidy sum he received was probably about full payment of the remaining years of his contract, plus probably some penalties for impugning his reputation. But if you're going to do that, you got to know you got it. And they didn't have it, obviously.
Yeah. Well, like you had mentioned about Tony Petitti not like, understanding college football, one of the comments was he's, you know, a New Yorker, doesn't like a college football guy. I think you become the president of the University of Northwestern, like you have to, or Northwestern University, you have to understand like who the legends there are, and you have one as the football coach. And even if you want to fire him, it better be ironclad. It can't be, you can't fire a guy who could file a huge lawsuit against you and win. Like you screwed that up. Like you better know. You got to know every I dotted, every T crossed if you're going to be able to do that, because you're not going to win any favors by, you know, besmirching the legacy of one of your legends.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if there was any other topics for Big Ten you wanted to get to. We could move on to questions unless there was.
You didn't want to touch on anything else?
just kidding. If you follow David, and if you look at our, if you're watching on YouTube, look at the new graphics I created.
Yeah, they're very nice.
They're very nice. I think they're nice. Before we get into this, I'm going to go give you what Kings fan said in the chat. It seems like David Woods is becoming a cranky old man on X. If you've read his stuff, Gil said, I'm here to see if David Woods will finally talk about the UCLA media policies for football. Bro has been silent about it. So I'm not sure why you, Mr. Woods, have not shared
your feelings.
This on X or Bro or anywhere. It's not national. Like, it's fun to see national media members like quote tweeting you or commenting on these things. But if for people that are coming in unaware of what's been going on at UCLA fall camp practices, maybe fill everyone in.
Let's start broader.
Okay. Oh, broader.
There is a trend in, I would say it's very specific actually to college sports coverage. Because most of these coaches they get too much money, and so they have dictatorial capacity to basically say whatever they want about the program. Like, whatever they say goes. And there's nobody to really say no to them anymore. So you're ending up with more restrictive policies everywhere. Now, I know it's a troubled media environment, and people don't give a crap, and they don't want to hear about it, and I get it. I totally do, and I don't really want to talk about it.
Yes, you do.
Yes, I do. but I understand. But I want you to understand, sports journalism isn't real journalism. This is fake. As I said earlier, this is fantasy land. It's all fake. It doesn't matter. Do you have First Amendment rights as a freedom of the press, like, type thing? Like, yeah, you got First Amendment rights. Like, somebody on the street has First Amendment rights, but this is not the classic, the free press, you know? And I don't want to make those arguments, because I think people get, especially our Northwestern grad journalists, get a little too into their own asshole about this stuff. It's not that. I think it's a very particular thing that's going on where at a lot of universities where they have a built-in fan base that they know is going to come and give a crap and pay money and all that kind of stuff, they don't really have to give them much. And so a lot of places they don't. And so practice access in a lot of places has gone down to, you know, whatever. I think the general sense is 20 to 30 minutes tops, and you're, you know, you can film or take photos, but it's individual drills, special teams, that sort of crap. And that sucks. It's stupid, but I won't say I get it, because I don't. I think it's just everyone else is doing it, so everyone else is doing it. Fine. Okay. You guys are all stupid, but it's fine. You can be stupid together. But that's a thing that's going on nationally, and it's getting a little bit more restrictive. And you've got your notable exceptions. You've got your Kenny Dillinghams. You've got your Jed Fishes. You've got Brent Brennan. I think they're open at Arizona. You've got Vandy. You've got Wisconsin. I think all those schools are some version of open. But then you've got schools that are more restrictive. So that's just preface. UCLA, for the first time this year, closed spring ball for the most part to media and to fans. So you couldn't watch for more than media could come and show up for like 10 minutes for most practices. Fans couldn't show up to anything except for the three open practices. Every spring before that, they were open. Then in fall camp, what's gone on is more restrictive even than that. And then we had to drive down to Costa Mesa. Bad communication. Basically, set an expectation that you could go to four periods of practice. So individuals, special teams, enough that we can write like a bare bones practice report with some information. Then one day comes, we all drive down there. We don't have any interview availability because they restricted that to a single day of the week. But we all drive down there because we're thinking we get another 20 minutes of practice. It's literally 8 minutes of stretching. Now, the big key here is we can't even take pictures or video anymore for reasons that are first not disclosed to us and second are very stupid. And then
stretching secrets, David.
Stretching secrets. And we couldn't take pictures or video. So it was, can you form a practice report? based off the ankle flexibility and hip flexors of the different players. Obviously not. So that was deliberately rude and displayed some animosity. And this is the interesting part. And this is where I think this whole thing is getting kind of weird. This week, they discontinued player interviews, which is insane. Like, that's an insane decision to take. Because, look, do you read them? I don't know. But the reality is feature interviews are how a lot of people, maybe not you specifically, but how a lot of people get to know the players. Again, as we talked about earlier, 50-some-odd new players on UCLA's roster this year. That's the same for most rosters nationally, I would guess. Fans of college sports in particular, much more than the pros, they want to know these guys. Like, they want to know, you know, who these people are, because it's part of, like, kind of growing with it. Now, the reality is Transfer Portal makes that different than it used to be. But you want to know them. And feature interviews, feature stories, that sort of stuff, that's how it happens. You don't get those if you don't make players available for interviews. It's also crazy in a world of NIL to not allow players to market themselves, yada, yada, yada. That's all stupid, too. It's a baffling and insane policy that is, in my humble opinion, and based on what I know, based on animosity and not any kind of competitive, because they'll often say, oh, we don't want to show anything to our first opponent and all that kind of stuff for different restrictions they'll make. That's not what's going on here. That's not why you don't make player interviews available. There's a very strange thing going on here with UCLA.
Well, is UCLA in like a small market so that everyone has to cover the team anyway? There's no other sports or leagues going on that the media would focus on if you're going to close everything off? Like, I'm sure that's everyone's just going to focus on UCLA anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's the only game in town. certainly not like ninth on the list of sports teams to cover in the city. I don't know. I honestly don't know what the end game here is for Deshaun Foster. I don't know what he thinks this is going to accomplish. Because I think it's like at some level designed to hurt the media, like trying to make it, you know, harder on us. And the reality is, for us specifically, it doesn't really have much effect. For like, you know, the newspaper writers, I guess to some extent, but they've got contracts. They'll just go cover something else.
Yeah.
Like, I just, this is, it's like, I don't know. What's the phrase? Spiting, you know,
cutting off your nose
to spite your face. Yeah. It's not even that. Like, it's more than that. It's just,
it's dumb.
It's an own goal for no reason. It's that stupid stuff that Lincoln Riley pulled at Oklahoma, but there was an antecedent to that at least. Like, you know, where he banned the student reporters.
Yeah.
But they had been like doing something. I don't remember what it was.
This is just out of spite. And
it's weird. That's the part that I find it very strange. And I find it a very strange thing for him to be focused on 8 days from the start of the season.
To me, when you see head coaches do things like this, it's like you're trying to control something because other things are out of control. Like when you see a head coach make decisions like this, no matter what they are, that tells me things are bad behind the scenes, because this is what you can control. Like, you're not controlling some of the other things that you think would actually win football games. This is what you're going to focus on. Like, that's never a good sign. And, you know, I've covered USC for almost 30 years now. USC has been one of the more open programs. It's got more and more restrictive over the years. I think they still do a pretty good job of giving us the ability to create content, even though I think they're probably more paranoid that, like all coaches, you're more paranoid than you should be. But I've maintained from the beginning, and I think Pete Carroll understood this better than anyone, our sites cover recruiting. And you know, we would talk to Pete Carroll. He talked about this. He knew recruits and their families watched our site. So if a player's getting recruited by UCLA, they're probably reading the stories on Bro. Yeah. Who they're, you know. And if we would go down to those summer workouts and film them and show the guys having a good time, he knew the recruits would see that. And he was like, come on in, film our stuff, you know, because in his mind, that was like us being like propaganda. It was great for us. Like, I mean, Daniel Jeremiah would like text me and be like, hey, I loved watching your summer workout videos of these guys. And I really liked the way, you know, whoever, like Marquise Lee was, you know, catching. There's good stuff there.
There's so many elements to this. We can start with that, where it is beneficial for the program to have coverage. Like, yes. It's beneficial for them to have coverage on our sites. It's beneficial for them to have coverage in the newspaper because, first, marketing vehicle. But I would say, like, for Bro especially, like, look, I'm not going to get into numbers. We haven't fallen off since the 2015 high point of Jim Mora. What has is the general fan base. Like, our subscriber base is a greater percentage of the fan base than it was then because we have not fallen off. So if you look at that, that's your number one way to reach your craziest fans. Like, the ones who are most committed is through us. So first, that's something that I would say in the last 20 years, most coaches have understood, not all coaches. And the ones who haven't have generally struggled at UCLA. But I would say, like, there's lots of reasons for that. But I think it's fundamentally there's major benefits to being able to put your face and your message, your words out there. And that can be through, obviously, interviews, but it can also be through, showing practices, showing, different things that happen, having people write about you more extensively and more openly. And that's kind of one thing, which is the benefit for the program. Yeah. I think there's also just like some basic things here that this is fantasy land. It's not a real thing. I think coaches, and to some extent administrators are the ones who get so caught up in this that they forget this part. Media tends to as well sometimes, but like, I want everyone to understand this isn't real. Like, this isn't something where we need to be all like Pentagon Papers about it. This is not real journalism. This is not a real thing that happens. It's not war. This is entertainment. And part of the entertainment ecosystem is people writing about it and people talking about it and people analyzing it and talking about it left and right and back and forth. And I think the best coaches understand that, and they understand the entertainment value of it. And it's why some of these really great coaches go on to be very good on the mic, because they understand it, and they understand that you're kind of a carnival barker at some level when you are a head coach. You've got to be kind of crazy, and you got to say things in kind of a crazy way. Like, Nick Saban even gets this. Like, he's really good on game day. Why do you think that is? Like, it's because he understands the game. There's lots of guys who understand the game. Yeah. He understands how to package it, how to sell it, and he always did at Alabama too, because even with their highly restrictive coverage, you never felt a deficit when you were an Alabama fan on getting your Alabama information. He has a freaking weekly radio show when he was the head coach, or daily. I don't know what the hell it was. But I guess my point is, it's all entertainment, and you want people to want to be interested in it. You don't want to discontinue their interest, but also you don't want to attempt to hurt the people whose job it is to cover the team. Like, and not from like a just a give and take standpoint, like they'll do good things for you if you do them for them. It's other people who have jobs in this entertainment ecosystem. And if you take away the jobs in the entertainment ecosystem, you're taking away the entertainment. It's not fun. And so I'm not saying that, being a jerk to the media in one particular instance can do that. It probably can't. But if, this constant restriction continues everywhere, it does diminish the capacity or the desire of a lot of, I think, publications to cover teams on a day-to-day basis. And it reduces the enjoyment for fans on whatever incremental level you want to call it. And I understand games are the most important thing. Totally great. Totally get it. But off-season stuff, reading a recap. Like, I can remember before I was into journalism, I wanted to watch the Angel game, but then I wanted to read all the stuff afterwards about the Angel game. Like, I wanted to read all the recaps the next day in the newspaper or on ESPN.com
some
or whatever
stat
it was.
You didn't know or something like
that. Yeah. And like, that's part of the fabric of this whole thing. And I think it's extremely short-sighted. And going back to another theme I constantly am banging the drum of, it's people not understanding, I think, the fundamentals of the sport that they are involved in. Like, they understand how to coach it, maybe. They understand how to win games, maybe. But they don't understand why this thing ticks, why it keeps moving along. It's fans first. Like, it is, that's what it is. And what do they want? What do fans want? I think they want as much as they can get.
Yeah.
And I think the true obsessives are what make it. But, people analogize it to the pros and like say NBA can be pretty restrictive with access and all that kind of stuff. And nowhere near what, UCLA is doing this week, but they can be. But the thing is, there's a whole ecosystem of NBA writers who don't go to anything, but they do like heavy analytics. And that stuff gets scooped up by so many people because they just want anything. For a college team, the only people doing that at any level for a mid-level college team, which is a generous way of putting where UCLA is right now, the only people doing that for them is us. Yeah. Like, it's the local media coverage. You're not getting it from anywhere else. And so it's just... I'm arguing from a different perspective, and you can think my arguments are selfish and, you know, self, you know, trying to whatever, and that's totally fine. There is some element of that, but it's also like when I, you know, take my 10,000 foot view, how does this help?
Yeah.
Like, how does it help you? And at a fundamental level, I just think it hurts.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think some of it's control with the schools want to have their own media product. Like, well, we can write stories and we can do videos, and yeah, you can. But you know that's more like state-sponsored media. It's not going to work to be fulfill the needs of all the fans out there. You can't talk about recruiting. There's a lot of limitations. So some of it's like control. Like, yes, we need more coverage, but what if it's bad and blah, blah, blah? What if they see something? And I think that's – if you're paranoid and that's what you're worried about, then you have bigger problems on the team. But I've always felt, too, that being in a place like Los Angeles – we joked about it earlier, but – when Caleb Williams was, you know, a few years ago, he was the Heisman Trophy winner, you know, the biggest name in college football. You could argue he wasn't top 20 as far as like sports celebrities in this city, you know? And if you were in Oklahoma, yeah, he's the biggest name in the state, you know, outside of a couple of the Thunder players or something. Arkansas, you know, Nebraska, obviously that you have a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, you're the biggest dude in the state, you know. But if you have Shohei Ohtani and LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard, and like, there's just, LA has a ton of other massive, massive sports stars. As big as Caleb Williams was, he wasn't, you know, his media, like his Instagram, all that stuff, so much smaller than all these guys. That's what you're competing against. And you don't want to discourage when newspapers are consolidating, putting, well, why am I going to send anyone to UCLA? Like, they can't interview anyone, can't watch. Like, I think that's just, it's just dumb. And I think Deshaun Foster being a new head coach, he shouldn't have that kind of power. There's got to be someone there that's like, look, dude, we can't have that happen.
UCLA has generally been a pretty reactive and not proactive institution as far as a lot of policies go. And I think a big part of the problem is just like thinking two steps ahead. Okay, we've hemorrhaged season ticket holders. We've now gone to a model where we're turning over the roster 50% every single season. People are also going to get more disconnected because they're not playing the same teams that they used to play every single year.
Yeah.
How can we make people feel more connected? How can we make fans feel more connected? Like right now, there should be insane outreach from UCLA to like every single like outlet they can find in the LA area to try to get people invested in the product that they're trying to put out there, because they have to be worried at an existential level right now. Because look, the TV money gets you to a certain place. It doesn't get you all the way there if you continue to lose season ticket holders, if you continue to lose people who are part of the fan base. Like at some level, you know, there's talk of unequal revenue sharing, right? Well, will UCLA ever be part of that conversation if things continue trending in a negative direction where they're not a big TV draw because people don't care? These are the kind of things that I think like having some vision in the athletic department would certainly help, because I think there, as you said, Deshaun Foster can't be making these decisions by himself. And that's part of the problem is I think he, you know, I don't know what his motivation is for doing all of this stuff, but it is him that's doing it. And that's the part where it's just you've got to have somebody above you who's got more vision of what this thing needs to look like for you to have more butts in seats, regardless of whether you go 6-6, 8-4, 9-3, whatever it is, that you get people more invested in this thing and you can sell it on a 1-year, 2-year time horizon, not, you know, hope they show up once they start winning. That's not a plan.
No.
Because you know what? Most teams in college football don't win at that level. Not even just most. The vast majority of teams in college football don't win at the level where winning by itself
is enough to get fans in seats.
And it's harder to do that now than even before. Like, it. Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's tough. If your plan is, look, we're just going to shut everyone out and just win games, and then they'll come, like, that's not a good plan. It's just not. Like, you have to get people excited about it.
And then there's the indicators of what this means. You know, I think there's an indicator that was obviously very positive from Kenny Dillingham at ASU, right? And I don't mean to keep using him as an example because I do think he's a little bit of a unicorn, my beloved over-caffeinated unicorn, but a unicorn nonetheless, is that...
Not just going to play because it's fun.
It's...
If you don't expect to win every game, yeah, problem. I don't care if I'm playing Michael Jordan in basketball. I'm not playing him to lose.
But I guess my point is with Kenny is he walked in there day one and it was open practices. That confidence, but also that openness, that it's an indicator, I think. It's an indicator about what you think that program can be, what you're scared of, what you're not, but also just confidence. And I think that kind of confidence rubs off on fans. Like, I think it rubs off on them in the way that, like, wow, we might actually do something. Yeah. And then you give guys like Chris Cartman enough leeway to write stuff that hypes him up and says, no, ASU is going to be pretty good this year.
Yeah.
Like, really, they've got this, they've got that, they've got this, they've got that. And it gets people pumped up. And so you're not worried about, okay, maybe if we start 4-0, we'll finally get some people for Penn State, right? It's instead, well, we got a little bit more for the first game than we thought we would because people are excited. And then you get a little bit more than you might have otherwise, and the snowball starts. But I do think as an indicator, being super closed off and acting like an embattled fifth-year head coach who's at the end of a losing tenure and is just waiting to get fired versus what should be a second-year head coach who's coming off a good end to his first year, finished 5-7, but it was a good finish, who should be, you know, getting that kind of momentum going, and instead he's shutting down. And I find it all very odd.
No, I do. I agree. And I think you have to take the temperature of what is going on where you're taking over. And obviously the Herm Edwards stuff was a mess, right? And I think Kenny Dillingham comes in and is like, okay, here's where it was. Here's where we want it to go. UCLA was pretty much a mess. We've never seen a head coach like leave for an in-conference foe, like for a lesser job as a offensive coordinator. It was late in the process. You're not an experienced head coach. I think you have to come in with a much more open, like, don't act like Nick Saban, like you've been there for, like you said, embattled coach for 5 years. Like, hey, man, we're going to have a good time. We're going to invite the former players. We're going to buses for, to get to the road, whatever it is. You're going to, like, let's have a good time, not shut everything down because I'm worried that I might lose my job. Like, that's the way you guarantee you losing your job. That's what you're worried about. Kenny Dillingham came in shooting from the hip and was just like, let's freaking go. If we go out, we're going to go out swinging, not cowered in the corner hoping something good happens. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's a good analogy, but yeah.
No, I agree. We'll see. We'll see how this continues to trend. It's obviously not in good shape right now.
Yeah.
But it is a trend nationally. I just think UCLA has somehow gotten to the forefront of it, which is crazy behavior.
We got Johnny says, God, I keep putting up the wrong ones here. Sorry. Do you think Coach Foster's newfound confidence after bombing last year's Big Ten Media Day and doing decent this year has gotten to his head? Is he going after the media now that he has mastered the art?
I'm not going to get into specifics because I know a little bit too much of the backstory here, but it started long before that.
It did. Okay.
Yeah, he's been trending poorly on the media since fall.
Okay. Kyle says Nebraska and Penn State are going to absolutely flood the Rose Bowl. They'll outnumber UCLA fans. I don't know about that, but I think there'll be a lot of, but that happens in LA a lot for, I mean, the Rams, it happens a lot. You know, there's a lot of transplants here. I don't think that's a specific UCLA thing, but
yeah,
it might get a little worse because of this. We'll see. All right. Well, why don't we do this? We'll take a break and we'll get to some questions. We've got a bunch of emails to get to. Back in a minute. Alrighty, we're back here on the podcast of champions. Love talking Big Ten football, don't you?
That's right, baby.
Good stuff. I love the rant. I might clip the rant and put it up on CBS Video so you can like Should that be good? We can promote that all over.
Like, yeah, I think that'd be great.
Should we do that, or do you not want to do that?
Which part?
You're like, just when you just gave the whole spiel about
the entirety of it,
no,
you know, 15, 20 minutes.
No, like your first like four or five or whatever it was. Like you spoke for like, just put that up there.
Yeah, whatever.
That might be good. Okay. We got a lot of emails to get to and no voicemails or anything, but we had some texts and everything. We had a text from Oxnard Steve. I think that was our first one, David. Ryan, glad to hear you mentioned Oxnard in your most recent POC podcast. Yes. The Cowboys train here every summer, and yes, they are very fan-friendly, and the city of Oxnard really promotes it. Even though we in Ventura County are mostly Rams fans, the Cowboy events are very well attended. College football programs are completely missing out by not opening practices to the public and not schmoozing media members to get the word out. Let's all demand more access, Oxnard Steve.
Wow, that came a while ago.
But that was, I think, the day, last day we did our show.
Right, but that came... like talking about access and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
And it was kind of came full circle.
Yeah, love that. This is from Ice Cold 1906 Broboard. So, wondering if you guys can discuss how much a five-star quarterback used to cost versus how much one costs now. Sometimes they cost as little as for free.
Yeah.
In a couple of instances. Now, several million dollars.
Yeah. It could.
Yeah.
It could be. Speaking of, why don't I put this up here, the chat question, and we'll get back to the emails. This is from Fighting On MC. So I assume there's no updates on how Nico's doing.
I've heard good things, but here's the thing also. Like, we know a lot of people in the program, obviously. I don't mean to keep talking about this. We have a lot of sources. We can get information, but it's not our own eyes seeing it. Yeah. And so, like, a lot of the people I talk to are, like, donors or boosters or, you know, various other hangers-on with the program who are going to see things through rose-colored glasses.
Yes.
So it's not fake information. It's just, like, I'm not saying, like, I'm Mr. Skepticism. Obviously, I can get a little bit homerific sometimes, too. But also, like, I'm not going to call something good when I know it's going to be bad. And I think some of these guys, they don't even know what they're looking at sometimes. And so I just, anyway, that's all preamble to say Nico's apparently the best thing ever.
There you go.
Yeah. He's apparently the best quarterback in college football history and he's going to be awesome.
Nice. He got what? Like 1.5 million to, what do you think?
Something like that. Yeah. So that's, yeah. It was between 1 and 2.
Okay. Yeah. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Just less than he was going to get at Tennessee, but
correct.
He's back on the West Coast. It's a storyline that you want to follow. It was a big one for us in the offseason. So we'll look forward to that. Our buddy John Embrea, who's basically the reason why this show is happening, because he sent me a text with what that little was it Oliver Twist or what it was, like, more please? What was mm-hmm, it? Is mm-hmm. that what it was from?
Yes.
Oh, look at that.
Please, sir. Can I have some more?
So he was asking for a new show. So I texted that to David, and he's like, okay, let's do it.
It's all for you, John.
That's why we're here, John. He says, hello, Ryan and Dave. I was thinking about your favorite town and wondering, is there anything more, quote, Vegas than Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly teamed up together with the Raiders? It's like imagine Cher and Carrot Top appearing together at Caesar's Palace, a dream come true. Fast forward 15 years from now, which two current Big Ten coaches can you envision working together in the NFL? One as a head coach, the other as either offensive or defensive coordinator. And which NFL team would it be? Thank you for the podcast of champions. Stay real, John and Brea. Ooh.
Mm.
I think Lincoln Riley, like an offensive NFL coordinator.
Obviously an offensive coordinator
okay.
for Matt Rhule making his return to the NFL.
Oh, okay. That could be. But he does more of the Baylor stuff, right? Or... is that what
I mean, what is Dana doing? Dana Holgerson.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of air raidy. So I think Lincoln Riley would be a fit there.
Or like a defensive.
Well, Matt Rhule's a defensive guy.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that would work. And which NFL program?
I don't know and I don't care.
I think he likes to, like, what if the Rams, they'll take over for McVay?
When McVay is the ripe old age of like 48?
No, he's no.
How old is he now?
He's like 35 or something, or not even. I don't know, maybe something like that.
Yeah,
yeah,
love it.
Okay, thanks, right. John.
This is from Frank in Sacramento. What's all then? Ryan and Dave, I have a question that has been bothering me. With all this talk about the SEC not playing enough conference games, why doesn't the Big Ten level playing field by dropping down to 8 conference games also? It's like the concerned father who says to his daughter, whatever you do, don't let that boy get on top of you and bring shame on your family. And the girl answers, so how about I get on top of him and bring shame on his family? Frank in Sacramento. That's a pretty good line.
I don't know if that's the right analogy.
I love it. Well, this is a moot point now. It's not even a moot point. It's dead. It died. It's a dead point.
Yeah. I like that everyone's going to 9. So that's good. Because we'll probably be at 12 at some point.
Correct.
David, this is from POC Jock.
Love it.
POC David's transformation. David, you've inspired me with your physical transformation. I would like to mimic your playbook for good health. If you're willing to share, I'll assume it's either you, and he gives his list here. A, discovered Ozempic. He dropped it on the way in. That's true.
Yeah, it's true.
B, are dying. He'll argue that's true. C, suffered from food insecurity due to the dwindling super chats and no Trader Joe's sponsor like Ryan. Maybe. D, were rescued by Liam Neeson after being held captive and malnourished for months would explain the POC's recent absence.
It's actually just all the meth. It's doing just tons of methamphetamines, and it just keeps you active, you know? Keeps you moving.
Yeah. Oh, Andrew says he's 39.
McVay.
Okay. I didn't realize that old. Okay.
All right. This is from Maximus Decimus Meridius.
Ooh.
Good day to the greatest Big Ten insiders in the world. I must commend you on all the Big Ten insider nuggets that I receive on this show on a weekly basis. Question to Ryan. If Dave had 100 strands of hair for every time you provided insider info on Purdue football or even mentioned them on the show, how much hair would he have on his head?
It would be in the hundreds, but not quite 1,000. Probably.
Question to Dave. Rapid fire for you, Dave. Bigger blunder, Napoleon at Waterloo or initiation of Operation Barbarossa prior to securing the Battle of Britain? Probably Barbarossa.
Yeah, gotta go Barbarossa.
Gotta go Barbarossa, because I think Napoleon at Waterloo, is there a scenario where they win and he's able to, like, re-solidify his claim on, you know, all of Europe? Maybe. But everyone was kind of aligned against him. It was pretty much death's door already. I think you could make an argument. Nazi Germany could have still won in 1940. By the time you got to June 1941 when they launched Barbarossa, it was June, right? May, June, whatever it was.
I think so.
By the time you get there, they're already, like, in pretty rough strategic shape, because at some point very soon the United States is going to come in the war. They didn't knock off Britain. And then you're opening up this other front. Now, you could make an argument the Soviets were going to do it anyway at some point relatively soon.
I don't know. I don't think Stalin wanted that at all.
It was going to take a while.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was going to happen, but it was going to take a while. So, yeah, bad. I mean, obviously good. You know, we wanted them to launch Barbarossa because, you know, needed that to happen. But
and we took us like 3 more years to even get involved.
Also, so what happens if Stalingrad falls? The war is extended by like 3 months. But other than that, nothing.
You don't think it would have been
at that point? Nothing changes because
it was seized anyway, right?
Yeah. Right, and the industrial capacity of the Soviet Union wasn't going to be impacted all that greatly. They already had Lend-Lease fully set up. The only impact there would have been buying, you know, the Nazis a little bit more time. Question for both: all Big Ten coaches are running for president. All have different platforms and parties. What are some of them running on, and who wins the election?
Jeez. That's a lot. I don't know.
That's a tough one right now. Strength and honor, lads. Yeah, that's a lot for us right now, but maybe we'll revisit that. Try to ask that again if we do an off season this year.
But having like 18 coaches,
there's just too many coaches.
Parties and like, I don't think that's like, we'd have to be a little more specific. Like, give us some specific things. We got another super chat. Guess who it's from?
Is it from Matthew again?
Matthew.
What a sweetheart.
He must be like a trust fund baby or something. I'm not sure.
All these $5.
Just kidding. Love you guys. Since I'm a fan of a triad Big Ten team, and it's our last offseason episode, who is more hated by the old Pac-12 fans, Scott or Kliavkov?
Scott.
Larry Scott, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. That's a no-doubter.
Yeah, that's
Kliavkov, like, look, he was dealt a very tough job. Did he do a very poor job with that tough job? Yes, but he had a very tough job from the jump.
Yeah.
Okay. What's next? We've got.
Is this me or you? I think
it's me. Okay. I think this is Peter in Vancouver. Money versus success, gentlemen. Since you guys are now experts on the Big Ten, I'm hoping that you can provide some valuable insight on a question that I've had. Schools like Maryland, Purdue, and Northwestern are and have been getting full TV rights from the Big Ten and have been for quite a while, although the annual amount has changed over the last 5 years. Meanwhile, the former Pac-12 teams that joined the Big Ten were getting less than the Big Ten teams prior to joining, and two of those teams, Washington and Oregon, still are not getting full shares. And yet Washington and Oregon have been much more successful over the past decade at football than all but a handful of the other Big Ten teams. My first question is, why have Washington and Oregon been more successful at football than teams like Maryland, Purdue, Northwestern, etc.? Are some of those other teams not managing their money as well? Are they emphasizing and using the money for other sports? Or do Washington and Oregon have some other advantage that offsets the fact that they haven't gotten as much money? Which leads to the second question. What happens when Washington and Oregon start getting full shares of the Big Ten TV rights? Oregon is already among the top in the conference, and Washington could easily be in the top half of the conference by the time they get full shares. Could the top of the conference be Ohio State, Michigan, Washington, and Oregon in the 2030s? Regards, Peter in Vancouver, Washington. Peter, I think your tongue is in cheek here, but the answer is, and it's something I made a point of saying, I guess probably at the very beginning of this show, maybe 8 years ago, at a certain point, the additional money comes with diminishing returns, because what are you going to spend it on? More concrete? What do you do? What Washington and Oregon have that USC and UCLA lack in a lot of ways, if we're just speaking about the Western pod, is institutional commitment to football. And USC sort of has it sometimes, but not always. And there's some other forces at work at USC. UCLA almost never has it. It was during the Morey years for a brief period, and since then, not much. Institutional commitment to football. And what is meant by that? It means that everything in that AD is geared around making sure football has success, because they understand at a very fundamental level that's the engine for driving this whole, you know, kit and caboodle. And the reason Purdue, Northwestern, and Maryland don't have that, I can't tell you, because I don't know enough about those programs, but I'll also say, there are structural advantages at work. You know, Oregon obviously has, I know Oregon fans don't like talking about it. Oregon fans, obviously, you have Phil Knight. You have the Nike affiliation. It does help. Maryland, in theory, should have an Under Armour affiliation. Does not appear to be helping. But it is an advantage. It is a thing that Phil Knight has been able to invest a lot of money in that program that goes over and above.
It took time, too, you know.
And yeah. It goes over and above what, like, typical revenue share would give you. And that's, but it's also just, like, a thing that happens. Washington just has commitment. They've got a lot of donors who are committed to that thing operating appropriately. They're in a bigger market. Lots of things. They've got a history of success. They've got tradition. They've got a great fan base. There's so many things that give them a leg up also compared to Maryland's, Purdue's, Northwestern's, et cetera. History, institutional commitment, and then money. And the money matters, but you can also get it from donors if you've got institutional commitment, because one of those institutional commitments will be to raise funds for the football program.
Yeah. And I think for USC and UCLA, they came in as full share members, but because they went first, that's what it was. And the Big Ten was going to stop. Oregon and Washington needed an out, so they came over at a half share, knowing that just being in the conference is more important than whatever amount of money you're getting from a TV deal. Cal and Stanford took basically nothing to go to the ACC. SMU paid to do it. You know, Yep. Like it was just getting into the right party. Like you want to be at that party. But if the reason Oregon was good, because they were good when they left the Pac-12 and they were good in the Big Ten, just because Maryland's wallet's thick or Rutgers' wallet's thick doesn't make them a great football team. And it didn't matter. Oregon was already better. If Oregon State came over, they wouldn't have won the Big Ten in year one.
Right.
It just depends where you were. But you can't just look at the wallet and go, look how thick their wallet is. They're going to be great. Like, no, that's not what it is. There's tradition. There's all kinds of stuff. You know, it's if Oklahoma has a bad year, there's so much tradition. Like, they're probably going to have a good year the next year. And even if they were fined a lot of money, or, you know, Michigan's going to get fined a whole bunch of money. Do you think that's going to? No, they're still going to be good because they're Michigan. Like, that's just the way things go. You might have an up year, down year, whatever. But comparing a Rutgers to an Oregon is not – like, it didn't matter what league. You could put them in a Tiddlywinks league. It doesn't matter. Like, Oregon's going to be better. Like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Dave had a question. What competitive advantage has Deshaun gained over the Huskies? I'm not sure where this is going to go. Okay. Not sure if you guys have heard on the of this now that you focus on the Midwest schools. So for a little context, from Bruin Report Online, Deshaun Foster was asked why practice videos and player interviews aren't allowed. He said, quote, "If I was an opponent for another team, I'd look right at your guys' stuff and see what's going on." I never realized that. Wow. Mm. To me, this implies Deshaun's watching every bit of opponents' media to get a complete edge, especially as we gear up for this year's big game. He must be glued to the number one source for Husky practice recap and player interviews, dogman.com. So what's Deshaun's favorite Chris Fetter's player interview section or question? Sorry. For reference, if you're not familiar with Fetter's excellent work, like Deshaun and I are, here are seven of my favorite questions he's asked over the years. Uh-oh. Is this going to be
I think we're getting mean-spirited here.
Okay, so we don't want to like
it. All right, we're not going to go there. But I do find Dave's point funny about Deshaun because, yes, the implication would then be that Deshaun or somebody on the staff is consuming every single video interview conducted by every single opponent this year and looking at all of their clips of individual drills from practice.
Yeah. Some of these are good. When you eat pizza, are you a folded guy or more of a knife and fork guy? And how does that translate to third down conversions? I think that's what I'm a folded guy. Are you?
Pizza? Depends. Yeah. It's a New York slice, of course.
Yeah, I like deep dish too, so I don't fold that. But
yeah, obviously you're not folding deep dish. He says, so like if you're eating some crappy Domino's pizza, are you folding that?
Domino's is not bad anymore.
Okay, but if you're eating some crappy Domino's pizza, are you folding that?
Yeah, I'll fold it.
I'm not folding that.
Oh, why not?
I don't know. It's just not necessary.
But actually, if it's really hot, it kind of saves the roof of your mouth a little bit too. Mm. He says, so what competitive advantage do these questions give to Sean? If you don't know, maybe David should ask him next time he swings by practice. Thanks from Dave.
Love it. This is from John in the Bay Area. Embattled second-year coach. Mm. Gentle souls, with Deshaun Foster implementing more restrictions on media access to his team, is this now the fastest UCLA coach in recorded history to appear embattled? Why does Deshaun feel so embattled in his second year? I and the rest of society was under the impression that UCLA is a basketball school, so there shouldn't be this level of pressure on him to appear this embattled.
So true.
Turning to the truly embattled, the journos. Why don't they make the best of these restrictions and mimic Daryl Woods and cover the team in absentia? Take notes from the fellow ink slinger who hasn't seen UCLA play live in a decade. Decades? Keep up the good work, Ryan, and thank you for attending today's simulcast, Daryl. John in the Bay Area. Yeah, I mean, it's the big question is why behave this way? And I do know some backstory, but it's, I'll say it again, and I don't mean to like keep using pejorative terms, but there's no other way to describe it. It's all very silly. It's all very silly. And it's the kind of stuff you again see from a fifth-year head coach who's got a lot of history of getting criticized for repeated failures. Whereas I would say the media generally, especially the local media, handled him with kid gloves in his first year on the job. Like,
yeah, I think they gave him the benefit of the doubt.
People were pretty down on him after media day. I don't think anybody in the local media said much negative about it. Just, he was probably nervous.
I think he realized, like, his first time, you know, it was a weird situation. He was thrust into this. I don't think you were going to be overly critical of him. You're just going to give him a chance.
It was the general tone was this. He probably shouldn't have been hired. He has been hired. Not his fault. This is just a thing that happened. And now, you know, let's see if it works out.
And overperformed in year one. And, you know, if you beat Iowa, you beat Nebraska on the road. Like, yeah, there was a rough stretch there. But, man, like, I think there was some optimism. Like, this wasn't the time.
Total optimism. They've got a good recruiting class coming in. There's a lot of good hype about it. And you just lay this turd out there. It is just so weird. I do not understand.
Yeah.
Anywho, continuing on. Do you want to take this one?
Yeah, I'll take this one. James Franklin. I know you got to go in a minute or two, so we'll do these quick. Hey, guys. It's been a while since I've sent in a question, but I'm curious as to why Paul Finebaum constantly feels the need to dunk on James Franklin. The guy runs a clean program, wins at a very high level. It doesn't seem like a total douche. I don't understand why Finebaum is held in such high esteem. He's nothing but a propagandist for the SEC and just shits on every other program/coach that doesn't play in the obnoxious and overrated conference. It pisses me off to no end. I just want to hear your thoughts and opinions on why that F-face, sorry, Griffin, about that fuck-face. Okay, sorry, Griffin. Thanks from John in the SLC. Back in the day, Feinbaum wrote a like book about hate, why you should hate your rival fan base. Like he does this for a living. This is what he does for a living. Like when people email me or call, like talk to the shows, like, I can't believe Feinbaum said this. I'm like, I don't know why you care. He's like an SEC propagandist. Like, I don't know. Like it doesn't really make that big of a deal. James Franklin did great in the SEC. I mean, he had Vanderbilt winning there. They were ranked three times in 100 years, and two of them were James Franklin coaching. So maybe he's pissed that he left. I don't know, but I really wouldn't put much thought into this.
Yeah, I think he's just a troll and whatever. He's finding a new guy to troll. It's fine.
Yeah.
James
Franklin hasn't won the big one. And he's got to do that.
All right. So I'll be okay. Again, John, you're awesome. You're part of this ecosystem. Paul Feinbaum is also part of this ecosystem. You getting mad at Paul Feinbaum and calling him a fuckface? That's part of this. It's part of the fabric. It's you being so mad about this guy you don't know that you're calling him names via email is part of the entertainment. It's part of this. It's not real. Like, I'm sure if you met Paul Feinbaum, he's probably a perfectly nice guy. He does pro wrestling. Like, that is what he's doing. He's doing a bit. And it's great because people get all incensed about it. And then James Franklin has a thing to be, you know, maybe annoyed about when he talks about him this way. Or he has the bit with Lane Kiffin, and it's like, this is fun. It's part of the fun.
Yeah.
All this stuff is just, it's part of the thing. And you being mad about it is why this thing keeps going. And I'm not saying don't be mad about it. Be mad about it because it's part of the fun. You being angry about this is fun. It's fun for you too. Admit it. It's just part of the thing. You want things to sink your teeth into. It's entertainment. It's just for the jollies.
Yeah. This last one, that's our buddy Coach B in New York, right? He wants us to come to a game?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Attempt six or whatever. I don't know, man. I don't know why I send these. Attempt six of inviting you both to whatever shitty team I'm coaching at. Sorry, Griffin. Hopefully we actually win one this season. The last two teams I invited you to had a collective record of 2-21. I might be able to cop a ticket, but probably not two of them. If you guys want to stay at my place for the trip, you can, but my room is in Harlem. My room in Harlem is an hour away and is a fifth floor walk up and an 8x6 foot box with a full size bed. See you guys eventually. Probably not, but maybe. But don't. Coach B in New York.
I've had a lot of great invites to things over the years. I don't know if there's one better than this. You know, walk up five flights, share a twin bed or double bed or whatever it is with Coach B, who I haven't met.
I want to check out the game at the Sussex County Community College.
He must be very good as a 2-21 coach. Yeah, what's the schedule look like?
This is for the Monroe Mustangs, I think.
What is the 11-1 game?
They go at Sussex County Community College, then at Trinity Valley Community College. That's a tough back-to-back.
Yeah.
Then they play the College of DuPage or DuPage at home. Then it's the Georgia Military College down in Georgia. Then at Lackawanna. That's a tough one. Lewisburg College at home. Then it's Sussex County Community College again, Lackawanna College again. And then they close out with Snow College and Nassau Community College, obviously the big rivalry there on November 15th.
Yeah, Nassau, like that's, it doesn't get much bigger than that. That's pretty amazing. Lewisburg, I think I dated a girl like 20 years ago that went to Lewisburg. Like it's in Pennsylvania, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Is that where it is?
I don't know, man.
Does it say it on there?
I don't know, man.
No, it says Virginia, I think. Maybe it's a different one. It was Shippensburg. Never mind. Different. Those are different places.
They are.
I'm not going to go, but David's more adventurous than me. So. Yeah.
All right.
We got to wrap it up.
Let's wrap this thing up.
So for David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys all enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye. Yeah.